formerly Tchaikovsky 4, for the finale of its Masterworks series, 7:30 p.m. April 10th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Due to unforeseen circumstances, the title and program reportedly had to be changed, and Tchaikovsky 4 tickets will be honored for entrance into Beethoven's 8th. Masks are required for entrance, and seating will be socially distanced. Tickets start at $10 and can be purchased at MOSC.org. Student tickets are free with a paying adult or valid college ID. For more information on MOSC events, visit MOSC.org.
For the lighter side of local news, Recording Library of West Texas brings you the Lifestyle Show. Features from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. We'll feature fun local stories about people in our community, plus columns such as gardening and food. The Lifestyle Show, Friday mornings at 6 and repeated Sunday nights at 7:30 and Thursdays at 4:30 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 77 and clear. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-50s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the upper 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Thank you for listening to Enabled this week. I have information for you about research projects that are going all over the world, as reported in a journal called Science Daily. I'll start out today with a spooky story with the title of I Ain't Afraid of No Ghosts, People with Mind Blindness Not So Easily Spooked. The link between mental imagery and emotions may be closer than we thought. The date this was published in Science Daily was March 10, 2021. The source was the University of New South Wales in Australia. People with aphantasia, I better spell that for you right from the start, A-P-H-A-N-T-A-S-I-A. People with aphantasia, that is, the inability to visualize mental images, are harder to spook with scary stories. This is according to a new University of New South Wales, Australia, located in Sydney, what their study shows. The study published today, this was in March, in a journal called Proceedings of the Royal Society, tested how aphantastic people reacted to reading distressing scenarios, like being chased by a shark, falling off a cliff, or being in a plane that's about to crash. The researchers were able to physically measure each participant's fear response by monitoring changing skin conductivity levels. In other words, how much the story made a person sweat. This type of test is commonly used in psychology research to measure the body's physical expression of emotion. According to the findings, scary stories lost their fear factor when the readers could not visually imagine the scene, suggesting imagery may have a closer link to emotions than scientists previously thought. Here's a quote. We found the strongest evidence yet that mental imagery plays a key role in linking thoughts and emotions. This is from Professor Joel Pearson, who is the senior author of this paper. He is director of the UNSW, that's the University of New South Wales, a program called Science's Future Minds Lab. He continues, in all of our research to date, this is by far the biggest difference we've found between people with aphantasia and the general population. To test the role of visual imagery in fear, researchers guided 46 study participants. 22 of them had aphantasia and 24 had imagery. They added these 46 study participants to a blackened room before attaching several electrodes to their skin. Skin is known to become a better conductor of electricity when a person feels strong emotions like fear. The scientists then left the room and turned the lights off, leaving the participants alone as a story started to appear on the screen in front of them. At first, the story started innocuously. For example, you were at a beach in the water, or something like, you're on a plane sitting by the window. But as the stories continued, the suspense slowly built, whether it was a dark flash in the distant waves and people on the beach were pointing, or the cabin lights dimming as the plane starts to shake. Next we have a quote, skin conductivity levels quickly started to grow for people who were able to visualize the written stories, says Professor Pearson. The more the stories went on, the more their skin reacted. But for people with aphantasia, the skin conductivity levels pretty much flatlined. To check that differences in fear thresholds didn't cause the response, the experiment was repeated using a series of scary images instead of the text, like a photo of a cadaver or a snake baring its fangs. But this time, the pictures made the skin crawl equally in both groups of people. Here's a quote. These two sets of results suggest that aphantasia isn't linked to reduced emotion in general, but is specific to participants reading scary stories, says Professor Pearson. The emotional fear response was present when participants actually saw the scary material play out in front of them. The findings suggest that imagery is an emotional thought amplifier. We can think all kinds of things, but without imagery, the thoughts aren't going to have that emotional boom. The next section is called Living with Aphantasia. Aphantasia affects 2 to 5% of the population, but there is still very little known about the condition. A UNSW study published last year found that aphantasia is linked to a widespread pattern of changes to other cognitive processes like remembering, dreaming, and imagining. But while most previous aphantasia research focused on behavioral studies, this study used an objective measure of skin conductance. Here's a quote. This evidence further supports aphantasia as a unique, verifiable phenomenon, says study co-author Dr. Rebecca Keough, a postdoctoral fellow formerly of UNSW and now based at Macquarie University, also in Australia. This work may provide a potential new objective tool which could be used to help to confirm and diagnose aphantasia in the future. The idea for this experiment came after the research team noticed a recurring sentiment on aphantasia discussion boards that many people with the condition did not enjoy reading fiction. While the findings suggest that reading may not be as emotionally impactful for people with aphantasia, Professor Pearson says it's important to note that the findings are based on averages, and not everyone with aphantasia will have the same reading experience. The study was also focused on fear and other emotional responses to fiction that could be different. Here's a quote, aphantasia comes in different shapes and sizes, he says. He continues, some people have no visual imagery, while other people have no imagery in one or all of their other senses. Some people dream, while others don't. So don't be concerned if you have aphantasia and don't fit this mold. There are all kinds of variations to aphantasia that we're only just discovering. Next, Professor Pearson and his team at the Future Minds Lab plan to investigate how disorders like anxiety and post-traumatic stress disorder might be experienced differently by people with aphantasia. He ends the article with a quote, aphantasia is neural diversity, says Professor Pearson. It's an amazing example of how different our brain and minds can be. Once again, the story source for this was the University of New South Wales. The original article was written by Sherry Landau. This is about aphantasia, or also called mind blindness. Now, the next article from Science Daily is something you've probably heard before, but exercise can slow or prevent vision loss, study finds. This was published in July of 2020 from the University of Virginia Health System. This is in Richmond, Virginia. exercise can slow or prevent the development of macular degeneration and may benefit other common causes of vision loss, such as glaucoma, diabetic retinopathy, new research suggests. The new study from the University of Virginia School of Medicine in Richmond found that exercise reduced the harmful overgrowth of blood vessels in the eyes of laboratory mice by up to 45%. This tangle of blood vessels is a key contributor to macular degeneration and several other eye diseases. The study represents the first experimental evidence showing that exercise can reduce the severity of macular degeneration, a leading cause of vision loss, the scientists report. 10 million Americans are estimated to have this condition. Here's a quote. There has long been a question about whether maintaining a healthy lifestyle can delay or prevent the development of macular degeneration. The way that question has historically been answered has been by taking surveys of people, asking them what they are eating and how much exercise they are doing, said researcher Bradley Gelfand. He's a PhD from the UVA Center for Advanced Vision Science. Dr. Gelfand continues, that is basically the most sophisticated study that's been done. The problem with that is that people are notoriously bad self-reporters, and that can lead to conclusions that may or may not be true. This study offers hard evidence from the lab for the very first time. The section is called The Benefits of Exercise. Enticingly, the research found that the bar for receiving the benefits from exercise was relatively low. More exercise did not mean more benefit. Here's a quote. Mice are kind of like people in that they will do a spectrum of exercise. Hey, as long as they had a wheel and they ran on it, there was a benefit, Dr. Gelfand said. He continues, the benefit that they obtained is saturated at low levels of exercise. An initial test comparing mice that voluntarily exercised versus those that did not found that exercise reduced the blood vessel overgrowth by 45%. A second test to confirm the findings found a reduction of 32%. The scientists aren't certain exactly how exercise is preventing the blood vessel overgrowth. There could be a variety of factors at play, they say, including increased blood flow to the eyes. Dr. Gelfand of the UVA's Department of Ophthalmology and the Department of Biomedical Engineering noted that the onset of vision loss is often associated with a decrease in exercise. Here's a quote. It's fairly well known that as people's eyes and vision deteriorate, their tendency to engage in physical activity also goes down, he said. It can be a challenging thing to study in older people. How much of that is one causing the other? The researchers already have submitted grant proposals in hopes of obtaining funding to pursue their findings further. Here's a quote. The next step is to look at how and why this happens, and to see if we can develop a pill or a method that will give you the benefits of exercise without having to exercise, Dr. Gelfand said. He continues, we are talking about a fairly elderly population of people with macular degeneration, many of whom may not be capable of conducting the type of exercise regimen that may be required to see some kind of benefit. He urged people to consult their doctors before beginning any aggressive exercise program. Now, you should know Dr. Gelfand is a self-described couch potato. He disclosed a secret motivation for the research by saying, one reason I wanted to do this study was sort of selfish. I was hoping to find some reason not to exercise, he joked. But it turned out exercise is really good for you. Well, right after I finish this, I think I'll go for a walk. But no, we've got to switch to a different article, this one a bit more scientific, let's say. Restoring a rudimentary form of vision in the blind, using a brain implant to make the blind see again. This was published in December of 2020. The source is the Netherlands Institute for Neuroscience, and they abbreviate that the NIN. Restoration of vision in blind people through a brain implant is on the verge of becoming reality. Recent discoveries at the Netherlands Institute for Neuroscience, the NIN, show that newly developed high-resolution implants in the visual cortex make it possible to recognize artificially induced shapes and percepts. The findings were published in Science Journal on the 3rd of December, 2020. The idea of stimulating the brain via an implant to generate artificial visual percepts is not new and dates back to the 1970s. However, existing systems are only able to generate a small number of artificial pixels at one time. At the NIN, that's the Netherlands Institute for Neuroscience, researchers from a team led by Peter Rolfsma are now using new implant production and implantation technologies, cutting-edge materials, microchip fabrication, and microelectronics to develop devices that are more stable and durable than previous implants. The first results are very promising. The next section is called electrical stimulation. When electrical stimulation is delivered to the brain via an implanted electrode, it generates the percept of a dot of light at a particular location in visual space. This is known as a phosphene. The team developed a high-resolution implant consisting of 1,024 electrodes, and they implanted them in the visual cortex of two sighted monkeys. Their goal was to create interpretable images by delivering electrical stimulation simultaneously via multiple electrodes to generate a percept that was composed of multiple phosphenes. Here's a quote. "The number of electrodes that we have implanted in the visual cortex and the number of artificial pixels that we can generate to produce high-resolution artificial images is unprecedented," said Rolfsma. Next section is recognizing dots, lines, and letters. The monkeys first had to perform a simple behavioral task in which they made eye movements to report the location of a phosphene that was elicited during electrical stimulation via an individual electrode. They were also tested on more complex tasks, such as a direction of motion task, in which microstimulation was delivered on a sequence of electrodes, and also a letter discrimination task, in which microstimulation was delivered on 8 to 15 electrodes simultaneously, creating a percept in the form of a letter. The monkeys successfully recognized shapes and percepts, including lines, moving dots, and letters, using their artificial vision. Here's a quote. "Our implant interfaces directly with the brain, bypassing prior stages of visual processing via the eye or the optic nerve. Hence, in the future, such technology could be used for the restoration of low vision in people who are blind, who have suffered injury or degeneration of the retina, the eye, or the optic nerve, but whose visual cortex remains intact." This is explained by Dr. Shing, postdoctoral researcher in Rolfsma's team. This research lays the foundations for a neuroprosthetic device that could allow profoundly blind people to regain functional vision and to recognize objects, navigate in unfamiliar surroundings, and interact more easily in social settings, significantly improving their independence and quality of life. And once again, the materials for this article were provided by the Netherlands Institute for Neuroscience. I would like to remind you at this point that all the information for today's program comes from an online journal called Science Daily. Its website is www.sciencedaily.com. It is a favorite of mine, especially the section called Science News, which is what I'm reading from today for you. So the next article, Research Breakthrough for a Leading Cause of Blindness. The date for this was February 7th. The source is the Queen Mary University from London. First of all, remember the combination FHR4. FHR4. Researchers have identified a new protein linked to age-related macular degeneration that could offer new hope for the diagnosis and treatment of the disease. This disease affects over 1.5 million people in the UK alone, they said. And remember, this is from University of Queen Mary in London. The research team, made up of scientists from Queen Mary University of London, also from the University of Manchester, from Cardiff University, and Radboud University in Nijmegen, Netherlands, found significantly higher levels of a protein called factor H-related protein 4, FHR4, factor H-related protein 4. They found this protein in the blood of AMD patients. Further investigation using eye tissue donated for medical research showed the presence of the FHR4 protein within the macula, the specific region of the eye affected by this disease. The results of this study open up new routes for early diagnosis by measuring the FHR4 levels in the blood, and suggests therapies targeting this protein could provide promising future treatment options for this disease. FHR4 regulates the complement system, which is part of the immune system, which plays a critical role in inflammation and the body's defense against infection. Previous studies had linked the complement system to AMD, showing that genetically inherited faults in key complement proteins are strong risk factors for the condition. In this study, the researchers used a genetic technique known as a genome-wide association study to identify specific changes in the genome related to the increased levels of FHR4 found in AMD patients. The identified genetic changes also overlapped with genetic variants first found to increase the risk of AMD over 20 years ago. Together, the findings suggest that inherited genetic changes can lead to higher blood FHR4 levels, which results in uncontrolled activation of the complement system within the eye. Blood levels of FHR4 were measured in 484 patients in 522 age-matched control samples using two independent established collections of AMD patient data. The studies they used were as follows. The Cambridge AMD study, led by Professor Anthony Moore from the Moorfields Eye Hospital and the UCL Institute of Ophthalmology, which is now located at the University of California in San Francisco, and also Professor John Yates from Cambridge University, and the European Genetic Database, which they abbreviate EUGENDA, the European Genetic Database, led by Professor Annika Den Hollander and Professor Carl Honig from Radboud University Medical Center. There are two main types of AMD, the wet AMD and the dry AMD. While some treatment options exist for wet AMD, there is currently no available treatment for dry AMD. Dr. Valentina Cipriani, who jointly led the statistical data analysis with Dr. Laura Lorez Mata from the Radboud University Medical Center, and she is an expert in ophthalmic statistical genetics, she said, this is Dr. Laura Lorez Mata said, by unveiling FHR4 as a key molecular player for AMD, our study was able to dissect further the genetic disease predisposition at the factor H region. This is one of the most established genetic associations in the field of complex genetics. We hope our findings will accelerate interest from the wider research community in the involvement of the complement system in AMD, with the ultimate goal of uncovering the role of the whole, what they call the complementome, in the disease. Professor Paul Bishop, an ophthalmologist and AMD expert at the University of Manchester, said, "The combined protein and genetic findings provide compelling evidence that FHR4 is a critical controller of that part of the immune system which affects the eye. Apart from improving understanding of how AMD is caused, this work also provides a way of predicting risk for the disease by simply measuring blood levels of FHR4 and also provides a new route to treatment by reducing the blood levels of FHR4 to restore immune system function in the eyes. This was a quote to end the article by Dr. Paul Bishop from the University of Manchester in England. And once again, the material for this article was provided to the online journal called Science Daily by the Queen Mary University of London. Now we switch to the next article about color blindness. The headline reads, Color Blindness Correcting Contact Lenses. This was published on March 3rd of this year by the American Chemical Society. Imagine seeing the world in muted shades. Gray sky, gray grass. Some people with color blindness see everything this way, though most can't see specific colors. Tinted glasses can help, but they can't be used to correct blurry vision. And dyed contact lenses currently in development for the condition are potentially harmful and unstable. Now, in a journal called the ACS Nano, and that's again the American Chemical Society publication, ACS Nano, the researchers report infusing contact lenses with gold nanoparticles to create a safer way to see colors. Some daily activities, such as determining if a banana is ripe, or selecting matching clothes, or even stopping at a red light, can be difficult for those with color blindness. Most people with this genetic disorder have trouble discriminating red and green shades, and red-tinted glasses can make those colors more prominent and easier to see. However, these lenses are bulky, and the lens material cannot be made to fix vision problems. Thus, researchers have shifted to the development of specially tinted contact lenses. Although the prototype hot pink dyed lenses improved red-green color perception in clinical trials, they leached the dye, which led to concerns about their safety. Gold nanocomposites are non-toxic and have been used for centuries to produce what they call cranberry glass because of the way they scatter light. And we're talking about gold nanocomposites, little gold specks. So, the scientists wanted to see whether incorporating gold nanoparticles into contact lens material instead of the dye could improve red-green contrast safely and effectively. To make the contact lenses, the researchers evenly mixed gold nanoparticles into a hydrogel polymer, producing rose-tinted gels that filtered light within a certain range of wavelengths where the red and green overlap. The most effective contact lenses were those with 40 nanometer wide gold nanoparticles, because in tests, these particles did not clump together or filter more color than necessary. In addition, these lenses had water retention properties similar to those of commercial ones, and were not toxic to cells growing in petri dishes in the lab. And finally, the researchers directly compared their new material to two commercially available pairs of tinted glasses and their previously developed hot pink dyed contact lenses. The gold nanocomposite lenses were more selective in the wavelengths they blocked than the glasses. The new lenses matched the wavelength range of the dyed contact lenses, suggesting the gold nanocomposite ones would be suitable for people with red-green color issues without the potential safety concerns. The researchers say that the next step is to conduct clinical trials with human patients to assess their comfort. And once again, this story came from the American Chemical Society. Well, to summarize this program of research news from Science Daily, I can say that I hope you've learned about aphantasia, or mental blindness, the benefits of exercise, brain implants, an AMD protein called FHR4, and even about contact lenses with little gold specks in them. Well, to end the program today, I have a quote for you to think about. Remember the golden rule. Whoever has the gold makes the rules. Most people agree that this came from The Wizard of Id, a classic daily newspaper comic strip created by Brant Parker and Johnny Hart. They did this in 1964 with an attempt to satirize modern American culture and politics. That was back in 1964. Profound thoughts from a comic strip. Thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 79 and clear. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-50s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the upper 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by the Georgia Radio Reading Service, GARS. Hello, I'm Sonal Pathak, bringing you Shape and Women's Health magazines. I'll be reading from the March 2021 issue of Shape magazine. The first article is Build a Healthier Brain by Marnie Schwartz. Your brain weighs about 3 pounds, but it is arguably the most important part of your body. It's responsible for all the things that make you, you, your thoughts, memories, and emotions. Previously, scientists believed that once we reached adulthood, our brains couldn't change. But we now know that our brains can continue to grow throughout life and that our habits and choices can shape that process, says Alan J. Hamilton, MD, a neurosurgery professor at the University of Arizona and a co-author of the new edition of Younger Next Year. Here's how to boost and strengthen yours. Stay connected. The brain is a social organ, says Dr. Hamilton. In a study from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, when participants who were completely isolated for a period of time were shown pictures of people interacting, there was activity in their substantia nigra, a part of the brain that has been linked with hunger. This suggests that our brains are very sensitive to the experience of being alone and that social contact is a basic need, says study author Livia Timova, PhD. Tons of hormones and peptides are released with human contact, says Dr. Hamilton. When we're deprived of that interaction, inflammatory markers rise and brain hormones and neurotransmitters can diminish and well-being can deteriorate, he says. To connect with loved ones during the pandemic, Dr. Hamilton recommends scheduling regular video calls rather than texting. Seeing a face and hearing a voice triggers your brain to release feel-good hormones, he says. Exercise 5 days a week. A regular workout habit can activate stem cells that were dormant, encouraging neural growth, new connections, and increased brain volume, says Dr. Hamilton. When researchers measured people's levels of physical activity for a week and then scanned their brains, they found that higher levels of moderate to vigorous activity were associated with increased cortical thickness, a measure associated with brain health and cognition, in certain brain regions. When kept up, this may help prevent cognitive decline, reports a recent study in the journal Medicine and Science in Sports and Exercise. Being active promotes the release of proteins called neurotrophic factors, says study author Ryan Stanley Fleck, PhD. This, in turn, stimulates the creation of new brain cells and blood vessels in the brain, which helps maintain its structure and function. Scientists don't know why, but aerobic exercise seems to boost cognitive abilities, especially decision-making, while strength training improves memory and recall. Dr. Hamilton advises doing aerobics 3 times a week and strength training 2x weekly. Fuel up with brain foods. A diet that's good for your body, especially your heart, is also good for your brain, say experts. But a few foods and nutrients may give it extra power. For your brain to work the way it's supposed to, it has to have enormous stores of good fats, says Dr. Hamilton. Omega-3 fatty acids, particularly DHA, found in wild-caught fish and seafood, is a key part of brain cell membranes and is necessary to grow new brain cells and connections. Plant-based fats like olive oil, avocados, and nuts are also beneficial. Research has found that eating 1 to 2 ounces of walnuts a day may boost your brain and protect it from declining as you get older. Consuming fruits and vegetables can also keep your brain healthy and happy. An analysis published in the British Journal of Nutrition found that the more fruits and vegetables people eat, the lower the risk of depression, which may be because produce is loaded with antioxidants as well as vitamins necessary to make neurotransmitters. One of the smartest things you can do is follow a Mediterranean diet, which is full of plant foods and fish and has been shown to benefit your brain and keep it healthy throughout life. Challenge yourself. The brain loves to be pushed, says Dr. Hamilton. So while working on crosswords might be fun, what your brain is actually after is the tough stuff. For instance, learning a new language may help it grow, particularly in areas that involve flexible thinking, attention, and memory. And consider piano lessons. People who played an instrument in midlife generally did better on cognitive ability tests in their later years than non-musicians, according to other research. Playing music may make your brain more efficient, building up a reserve so that it's able to stay nimble even in the face of age-related changes, says study author Sebastian Walsh, a researcher at the University of Cambridge. These activities, as well as having an intellectually demanding job, stimulate the release of neurotrophic factors and push the brain to maximize its ability to form new connections, adapt, and change, says Dr. Hamilton. That was Build a Healthier Brain by Marnie Schwartz. The next article is Find Your Focus by Mary Anderson and Pam O'Brien. With the distractions in every direction these days, being able to concentrate and feel in control has never been more important. Here's how to tune out all the noise and zone in on what really matters. If you're having trouble concentrating, welcome to the new normal. Almost 1 year after we went into lockdown first, many of us still struggle all day with distraction. Given our concerns about the pandemic, worries about the economy, and uncertainty about the future in general, not to mention trying to juggle working from home with cooking 3 meals a day, possibly schooling your kids, and just trying to keep life moving ahead, it's no wonder we can't focus on anything. In a recent Harris poll, 78% of respondents said the pandemic is a significant source of stress in their lives, and 60% said they felt overwhelmed by the problems we're all facing. We can't focus when we're anxious and nervous because of the stress hormones cortisol and adrenaline pumping through our bodies, says Kristen Williamere, PhD, a neuroscientist and the author of the book Biohack Your Brain. We've got to unplug from all the stress. Taking a time out from everything we're worrying about and connecting to our bodies will help us shift from activating our sympathetic nervous system, which kicks in when we're under pressure, to activating the parasympathetic nervous system, which makes us feel a lot calmer and more focused. Here's how to cut through all the mental clutter and take back your brain. Start a healthy drinking habit. Water is an elixir for the brain. You need to consume large amounts to stay sharp. The brain is made up of 75% water, and every day we lose 60 to 84 ounces just through normal body functions. Even a 1 to 2% drop in fluids can affect your ability to focus and lead to brain fog, says Wallymuir. According to the National Academy of Medicine, women should consume at least 2.7 liters, about 91 ounces of water a day. Even more if you exercise regularly. About 20% of that can come from hydrating foods like cucumbers, celery, strawberries, and grapefruit. The rest should come from good old H2O, preferably filtered. A filter removes common water contaminants. To keep track, get 3 32-ounce BPA-free bottles in different colors. Fill them up and drink that water throughout the day. The morning bottle might be pink, the afternoon blue, and the evening green. When you have a system like this in place, you're much more likely to reach your quota. Wilmer also says, treat yourself to a fresh pressed green juice daily. It's hydrating and a nutrient-rich drink. One of the critical things I learned from working with neuron cultures in the lab is that basic metabolic processes produce a lot of acid. I would replace that acidic substance with a slightly alkaline solution that contained lots of beneficial nutrients and minerals, which helped maintain the ideal pH to support cellular health. The next day, when I looked at the neurons under a microscope, they would be thriving. Green juice, which is also alkaline, provides the same kinds of vital enzymes, minerals, and nutrients that can protect our neurons and create vibrant cellular health. To start your day with a green juice, try Wilmer's Morning Hydration Brain Boost. In a juicer, juice 4 to 5 celery stalks, 1/2 to 1 whole peeled cucumber, 1/2 cup Italian parsley, 1/2 cup baby spinach, and 2 to 3 stalks of red or Pacific kale. For a little sweetness, add 1/2 to 1 whole green apple. Finally, pour yourself some decaffeinated green tea. The healthy brew provides hydration, and studies show it can lower anxiety, boost focus, improve memory, and enhance overall brain function. Take a deep breath. Meditation is a powerful method for increasing your attention span. It's one of the fastest ways to shift your brainwave activity from the beta frequency, when you're super alert, to the alpha frequency, when you're relaxed and focused, says Wilmer. In fact, when meditation is practiced consistently over time, brain scans show increased activity in the prefrontal cortex area of the brain, responsible for focus, attention, and impulse control. Other research has found that 30 minutes of daily mindfulness meditation over 8 weeks can increase brain volume in the hippocampus, an area essential to learning and memory. To escape all the thoughts racing through your mind when you sit down and meditate, use your breath as a tool. When you're concentrating on a breathing pattern, it takes you out of your head and into your body so you can quiet your mind. To do it, take a deep breath in through your nose for a count of 6 or 7. Hold it for a count of 4, and breathe out slowly through the mouth for a count of 8. Repeat. As you continue breathing this way, you become thoroughly present in the moment. And that's when you're most focused, creative, and intuitive. Wilmer says, little sparks of genius can happen then. You might suddenly get a great insight or idea or solve a problem because you are calm and centered. To start to maintain a meditation practice, keep it easy and accessible. Try it the first thing in the morning. Sit quietly in your bed for 5 to 10 minutes with your eyes closed. Focus on your breath and see what comes up. That's the beauty of meditation. Discovering the incredible insights that can come from this stillness. Prime your body with a workout. A run or boot camp class will make your memory sharper the next day. And according to psychologist Philip D. Tomporowski, PhD, a kinesiology professor at the University of Georgia, there are two approaches to optimizing this effect. Exercise either before or after soaking in the information you're aiming to remember. If you exercise before learning information, the physiological arousal will give you a boost in attention, says Tomporowski. Sensory reactions due to increased movement, heart rate, and respiration flow back to your brain, resulting in a spark in neurotransmitters such as norepinephrine. All contribute to this enhanced memory magic. On the flip side, if you study and then exercise, another theory holds that you retain that input better thanks to how the hippocampus, the brain's librarian, works. Both methods are powerful and have been proved to pump up your recall. So, what is the reliable dose that does it? 20 minutes at a moderate pace seems to be the region of exercise intensity that systematically produces the effect, says Tomporowski. Train your brain to sustain. Another key way to hone your focus is to do activities that require it. Embrace habits that let you concentrate for at least 30 minutes, says Wilmer. That will teach your brain to zero in and sustain focus. Read an engrossing book or work on a jigsaw puzzle. Choose something that captivates you creatively. The brain goes wherever we direct it, so when you do something thoroughly engaging, your focus will grow. Know and hone these concentration styles. How to be at peak focus amid big distractions? Try what pro athletes do. Their primary technique for focus is to have a routine. This is Mark Ioagi, PhD, a sports and performance psychology professor at the University of Denver. You start with a broad vision, then gradually narrow and intensify your focus as you approach competition. To train your attention this way, sit and move through different concentration styles. Take in the room where you are as a whole. Broad external concentration. Shift to focusing on one object in the room. That's narrow external concentration. Shift to a body scan. That's a broad internal concentration. And then shift to a single thought or feeling. That's narrow internal concentration, says Ayoagi. As you develop this skill, you'll be able to stay in each style more intensely, what Ayoagi calls building the strength of your attention, for longer, which is attention endurance, and shift more easily, increasing flexibility. The keys are knowing what attentional style is appropriate for the task and then being able to switch to the appropriate one, he says. For instance, creating a spreadsheet might require intense, narrow external concentration as you crunch the numbers, whereas a yoga class might ask you to tap your narrow internal concentration to consciously exhale and inhale on cue. Mindfulness can help lock in all the attention skills above by boosting your mind and body connection in general. When you can't seem to meditate, try this mindfulness building drill he recommends. Before getting out of bed, cultivate a feeling of gratitude. Focus on one intention for the day, then step out of bed and take a moment to feel your feet on the floor. As a bonus, mindfulness also trains the skill of meta-attention, or knowing where one's attention is. When we don't have strong meta-attentional abilities, we have the experience of thinking we're attending to the meeting or whatever, and then waking up 5 minutes later and realizing our attention was somewhere else entirely, says Ayoagi. Your best bet is to make a regular habit of your concentration drills. As you improve, you can introduce distractions by having the TV on or music playing, and increasing the intensity. Try doing it in a crowded street or a busy shopping area, he says. That was Find Your Focus by Mary Anderson and Pam O'Brien. The next article is Let's Talk by Pam O'Brien. The key to making more money or getting a promotion is about creating disruptions, says Michelle King, an expert on gender equality and workplace culture, and the author of The Fix. Here's what that means and how to make it happen. What's holding women back at work? King answered, I reviewed over 3,000 academic articles looking at why women aren't advancing at the same rate as men. I expected to find things you would assume women are not good at, like networking or negotiating. But that's not supported in the literature. Women network, but they don't benefit from it in the same way men do. Women ask for pay raises just as often as men. They're less likely to get them, though, because women's contributions are devalued. In organizations, the ideal standard is the white, middle-class, heterosexual man who engages in dominant, competitive, and exclusionary behaviors to get ahead. The problem is, everyone is expected to live up to that, and the more ways you differ, the more barriers you're likely to face. How do we change that? King responds, when I went into organizations and asked what barriers women faced, I was told, women don't face barriers. Everyone is the same at work. We are employees. That kind of thinking makes it impossible to see our different experiences of workplace life. That's where inequality lies. It's something you encounter when people talk over you, make sexist comments, or ignore you. The starting point for changing things is to disrupt that denial. This will benefit companies too. An Accenture study shows that in environments where employees can be themselves and are valued for that, they are 6 times more likely to have an innovation mindset. If you feel you can share your talents and ideas, you're much more likely to be effective. Data shows that more diverse, inclusive workplaces are more profitable and productive. Women still make less money than men for the same job. How can pay equality finally be achieved? King responds, first, the idea that women can just ask for what they want and there will be no cost to them is ridiculous. when women assert themselves, they're defying the standard of what good looks like for them. So they're going to be penalized for being seen as difficult. Absolutely ask for a raise, but recognize it comes at a personal cost to your social capital. Here's what annoys me. By telling women to ask for a raise, we're also asking them to solve a problem they never created, and to ultimately face a penalty that hurts their careers. Workplaces made the problem, and they need to solve it. Transparency is the key. If companies say they're committed to equal pay, I'd like them to publish their data. We've seen that once they do that, the pay gap quickly closes. What can each of us do to make work life better? King responds, I want every person to become aware of how inequality works in their workplace and outside it. Do you know the barriers faced by people with disabilities, the LGBTQ community, racial and ethnic minority women? That is a never-ending journey, so you're not going to get a gold star. Educate yourself. Then think about how this plays out in your workplace. Ask yourself, when have I experienced those barriers? What are the barriers my colleagues are experiencing? What barriers am I likely to encounter in the future? Once you have that understanding, you'll start to know when you need to take action by speaking up, advocating, or pushing back. Cultures of equality are a precursor to innovation, creativity, and problem solving. This is the future of work, and companies are either going to embrace it or they're going to be left behind. That was Let's Talk by Pam O'Brien. The next article is Hit This Sculpting Sweet Spot by Mary Anderson. Remember this number, 8 reps. Why? According to a new study in the Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research, aiming for a weight that you can do just 8 reps per set gets your strengthening and sculpting done fastest. Basically, what determines the results you get from your lifts is training volume, or the amount of weight you hoist multiplied by the number of reps and the sets you do. In the study, exercisers bench pressed twice a week with the same training volume. 4 heavy reps for 7 sets, 8 moderate reps for 4 sets, or 12 lighter reps for 3 sets. All groups firmed their chest muscles equally, but the 4 and 8 rep groups got the bigger strength gains, with the latter spending half as much time on the bench as the heavy lifters. Rededicate yourself to your strength goals with our pro tips. The optimal way to strengthen at home. We've all had to get creative since the gym has been mostly off limits. Strength coach Dylan Schenk knows that all too well. Her weight training boutique, Lift Society in Los Angeles, has classes that use a full complement of weights and barbells. Yet Schenk has had to translate that to whatever dumbbells people have at home to follow her streaming routines. If you don't have the weights available to move up the amount you lift, your goal each week is to achieve more reps during a certain time sequence, she says. In other words, you're pushing your training volume up a notch by adding reps instead of pounds. Boosters for your biggest muscle. Your glutes are powerhouses that may be in a lockdown rut. Building strength requires progressive overload, says Brett Contreras, PhD, known as the glute guy for his specialty on the spot, meaning you need to turn up the challenge to keep seeing results. These tools can help. A glute loop. This sturdy resistance band levels up squats and lateral steps. Koba glute trainer. This board helps your squat form, plus adds resistance to deadlifts. The Sculpt Society sliders. Put these underfoot for lunges to increase glutes time under tension. 1 minute to build mental toughness. For a quick way to get your mindset in fighting form, it's hard to beat a combat thruster. I love this move because it's high energy and punching is a major stress release, says Peloton instructor Olivia Amato. Start in fighting stance, feet staggered and fists up, to do 4 quick jabs, alternating punches. Then crouch down, jump feet back into a plank, and then forward and pop up for four more punches. Go for two 30-second rounds. Once you get into it, you just flow through the move, she says. That was Hit the Sculpting Sweet Spot by Mary Anderson. The next article is Bake It Healthy by Laura Regge. One of the joys of baking is that you get to choose exactly what goes into your cakes, cookies, and brownies, says Joanne Chang, a James Beard Award winner for Outstanding Baker, a co-owner of Flower Bakery and Cafe in Boston, and the author of Pastry Love. The Renaissance woman is also in STEM. She has a degree in applied mathematics and economics. At Flower, we've discovered that using whole grains and healthy ingredients often leads to results that are more delicious than the original recipe, she says. Use whole grain flours. Baked goods made with whole grains offer a double advantage: better flavor and nutrition, says Chang. They are richer tasting than those made with white flour, and they're loaded with fiber and B vitamins. Tweak your favorite recipes by swapping up to one-third of the white flour with one of Chang's favorite whole grain flours. Oat flour adds a slight chewiness. Try it in cookies like oatmeal raisin for double the amount of oaty goodness. Rye flour has a flavor that's a little malty and slightly sour in a good way. It pairs perfectly with anything chocolate. Try it in double chocolate cookies or brownies. Spelt flour gives baked goods a nutty taste and aroma. Chang loves it in pie dough and fruit scones. Whole wheat flour brings a firm texture, a light nutty flavor, and a golden color to baked goods. It works especially well in blueberry muffins and banana bread. Mix in healthy ingredients. These nutrient-packed additions introduce new flavors and supply texture, says Chang. Tahini. Stir or swirl a spoonful into batter before baking, or whisk a little into a glaze, then drizzle on top of cooled cakes and cookies. Cocoa nibs. They give desserts crunch and a rich chocolate note without extra sugar. Sprinkle on top of shortbread cookies or brownies. Nuts. They're great in batters or sprinkled on top of baked goods. Just remember to toast them first to deepen their flavor. Millet. This small seed is an excellent source of fiber. Stir it uncooked into cookies or quick breads, or think of it as a healthy sprinkle and scatter it over them before baking. Coconut. Even the unsweetened kind adds a natural sweetness to a baked good. Use it as an ingredient in cookies or cakes, or make it a decoration by sprinkling on top of glazes or gently pressing into buttercream frosting. Pro secrets. Swap out some sugar. You can cut the amount of sugar in your recipes by a third, and you won't even notice it's missing, says Chang. Just use more of the other key ingredients like cinnamon, nutmeg, and vanilla for balance. Add some salt. Salt highlights the flavors in sweets and especially accentuates chocolate, vanilla, and citrus notes, says Chang. Start with at least 1/4 teaspoon of salt, then taste and adjust as you go. That was Bake It Healthy by Laura Regge. That concludes today's readings from Shape and Women's Health magazines. This has been Sunil Pathak for the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Thank you for listening to GARS.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
This week on the Recording Library of West Texas Radio's Saturday Night Movie, we continue our series of Oscar-winning films. Every week, we're selecting one audio-described movie from each decade leading up to this year's Academy Awards broadcast on April 25th. We're now to the 1980s. Because of the recent death of Texas author Larry McMurtry, Saturday, we're presenting the movie based on his book, Terms of Endearment, from 1983. This film fits perfectly within our series as it was nominated for 11 awards and won 5, including one for Best Picture.
Deborah Winger is Emma Greenway Horton.
Well, I'm officially pregnant. You're not happy for me.
Shirley MacLaine is Aurora Greenway.
Why should I be happy about being a grandmother?
Jack Nicholson is former astronaut Garrett Breedlove.
I was doing laps when you called. Lucky for us, only did eight.
This affair is going to kill me.
Relax, baby. No, it's going to be good.